And I want to talk today about the book Animal Eye with Cindy, who is the author of the book. And I actually am the publisher, so we're both very much involved. And I did a lot of editing, too, for the book. But, hey, Cindy, do you remember the original inspiration behind this idea? Why did you write Animal Eye?
Animal Eye started out as a quest-based fantasy in which I used my parrot as a main character. I had intended for the bird to be non-anthropomorphic, so it was going to be told from the perspective of the bird, as if the bird were a bird. So she was interpreting everything that happened as a parrot. The story was very quest-based, so it already had a very game feel to it. And then someone sent along a podcast link to me about a genre called Lit RPG, because I had written a short story in an anthology that was also published by Bear. The anthology was The Avatars of Web Surfer, and the story was The Fall of the Invincible Man. And that one doesn't qualify as lit RPG, but it does fall into the broader category of game lit. And so when I heard that that was actually a thing, I started thinking about what it would take to design the game mechanics and then rewrite Bird's Eye into Animal Eye.
Yeah, I remember it being Bird's Eye, and I remember you telling me about it. I seem to think I encouraged you to make it into game lit, but I can't remember exactly how that conversation went down. Do you remember?
I do, yeah. You and I and Andrea Graham were talking about Avatars of Web Surfer and how it really wouldn't have been that hard to convert avatars into lit RPG. It already takes place inside a computer mainframe, so it would just be adding the gaming elements. She wasn't keen on that idea. And so
I remember now. I remember that because I was suggesting to her that she do that, mm-hmm. because, you know, the sales weren't so that good or whatever. And it wasn't really catching people's imagination to say, you know, if you put it inside the game, maybe that would be. And I really didn't know about game lit. For me, I thought I was coming up with an original idea. But anyway, but I remember saying that to her and then you chiming in with information, right, about game lit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we went from there, I think. And you mentioned that you had this story, Bird's Eye.
Right.
Right. So was it, did I suggest you change it to Animal Eye, or was that your idea? I don't remember.
I told you I was thinking about converting it into a gamelet tale. And,
right.
And so as we were, you were helping me hash out the game scenario. And along the way, we decided that playing a parrot might be hilarious for parrot lovers, but would be harder to get into for other normal humans.
right.
So we switched it from just being the bird to a crow and an extremely large dog. And that's when you suggested that we tweak the name to Animal Eye.
So the question I should ask you before I make a comment, do you remember how long ago or how long it's been we've been working on this?
Well, I know I finished it in November of 2018, finished the first draft of Animal Eye in 2018, toward the end of the year. And Bird's Eye had existed for at least 1 year, maybe 2 years before that. Right after I'd submitted it to you, you got deployed to
Central America.
And so you were gone for half a year.
Right.
And then when you came back, then we got back to the
office. I was slow at going through your story. I was slow. But part of the reason, and I confess, it's my fault. But part of the reason was I'm super thrilled about the way you executed. Part of it is I hadn't read it all the way through, and I didn't see where you were going. But I couldn't put my finger on what it is you should do to make things better or more to my liking. Because I had some expectations that I hadn't even really put in words. So anyway, as I was going through, I was like, okay, what are we going to do to make this better? And it eventually occurred to me what we could do to help it. But I think that's part of it is I just needed to give you more credit. You're going through the story that you were going somewhere with it, because some of the things that you were putting into the story didn't seem to me like they were going anywhere, but they did. So, mm-hmm. you know, kudos to you. Hey, it's a long story though. I mean, for relative to what I'm used to publishing, it's like 170,000 words, I think, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. The final word count clocked in just under 176K.
Yeah,
so it's about 50,000 words longer than the other longest thing I wrote.
Right, it's pretty long, but it's actually appropriate for the genre. So could you talk a little bit about gamelit genre? Because people who listen to this podcast may not know what that is.
The gamelit genre is all about stories that take place within a game world. The main characters are playing a game, and the story is about how that game unfolds. And it also has to include game mechanics, leveling structures, skill development, things of that sort. The degree to which it has actual stat tables and other numerical information will determine whether it classifies as lit RPG, which is sometimes called game lit crunchy, or if it'll classify as game lit light.
Now, I brought this up on Speculative Faith blog, and I blogged about this, and some of the comments I got mentioned that the Japanese have been doing game lit for a while, or they, you know, like even a game like Dragon Ball Z, is it got a game in it, or certainly Pokemon has a game that's part of the story. They're playing, well, I don't know, is it a game? Kind of a contest, I guess. It's not really exactly a game. But anyway, but they link it to a game immediately, that there was a trading card game that went into it. So it's not, I mean, this is not an entirely brand new idea, I guess. And, you know, the Jumanji back within, I don't know, what was that, the 90s? So it's Robin Williams. It was a game setting. So it's not entirely original, but I think that you mentioned that in Russia, it became popular in a way that really was different than anything that's just going on in, you know, in Japan or Western world. Is that right?
Right, yeah, the actual term lit RPG was coined from the Russian writers who were working on stories of that sort, and then they were translating it back into English, and then the term lit RPG was coined. The Japanese versions of the genre have other names. I can't pronounce some of them, but one of the names is isekai. There's another one that I don't know how to pronounce. It's Wuxia.
Yeah. But Wuxi, I don't know. I don't know how to say that either. But I've never studied Japanese. It's one of the languages I've never studied. But right, it exists, but I don't know that it's really the same. But anyway, but lit RPG, as it's called, or game lit, has really got started. I think you mentioned about 2012 and being translated over from Russian. And I think it's a growing genre. And how would you say that video games have influenced the way the genre is done or thought about?
Well, video games play a huge role in it because most of the gamelet takes place within virtual reality video games. Some of them have coined a different term for it, full immersion virtual reality, so that you plug into some sort of a system and you can walk around in the environment and feel things and use all of your senses, and it's as good as being there.
Yeah, and that's, and now how much of that is, I'm trying to think what's the word, when you're writing as a fan, you know?
Fan fiction.
Fan fiction, right, yeah, that's the word. How much is it fan fiction for established video game things like World of Warcraft? Is there much of it like that or not much?
I've heard that there's a goodly bit of it on a couple of the general sharing sites like Royal Road and Wattpad. I don't frequent those sites, so I really can't say what the ratio looks like. But a lot of the unique lit RPG and gamelit tales, the writers are creating their own game systems and then populating it with characters and quests and all kinds of craziness.
Yeah, that's what I saw, too. I mean, you've spent a lot more time researching this genre than I have. But I spent some time looking around Amazon, some other places, at, you know, what it comes up when you search for lit RPG or gamelit. And I found that it looks like they're creating innovative game systems, all of them. I mean, that's kind of what it's about. You create the game as part of the story. Also, I found a few examples in which the story seems to be structured in a way you don't know if you're in a game or not. You find out eventually that you're in a game, which is a different feel to it. So they don't all take the same approach to what, you know, what the status of the game is in the story. Am I being fair about that? Or
right, some of them are much more like Portal Fantasy, but because they have game mechanics and level systems and skill development, they still count as gamelit.
Right, yeah, that makes sense. So I think that when I went to classify your story to put it on Amazon, there is no game lit under the genres or lit RPG, neither one, you know, because you can pick from various genres, and there's, you know, steampunk and there's cyberpunk and there's dystopian and post-apocalyptic and many other subgenres of science fiction and fantasy, but their game lit is not listed anywhere. And I'm not even sure, would it be a subcategory of science fiction? I suppose, maybe.
It should be, yeah. Either science fiction or fantasy, depending on which take the game spins after. There are some sci-fi gamelets and quite a few fantasy ones.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So it's based on like an RPG video game, which is a little cyber, maybe in a broad sense, cyberpunk. Not the feel of cyberpunk, but just the fact that it's, you know, virtual and you're in a game or in a virtual system. And then the setting might be fantasy, epic fantasy a lot of times, like a lot of popular video games are. So that's, you know, what do you call that? It is, I guess, science fiction, but with a real fantasy flair or feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tricky to classify. I think a lot of the other writers are going further afield and tagging role-playing games instead of anything under a regular novel category.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that may make sense. It's just it's its own category. And mm-hmm. I know that there are certain categories. I have friends who are Christian authors, as you know, I'm a Christian author, and so are you. I don't know any Christians who are writing game-led, really, other than yourself. Do you know anyone?
There's one other that I'm thinking of, and I'm blanking on his name, unfortunately, but he writes under a pseudonym.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm totally zeroing out on his name.
It doesn't matter. But it just, I mean, I wasn't that specifically curious, but I hadn't heard of anybody. And so I think you're doing something innovative, and that's a good thing. So why, you know, one of the things that we did put on the Speculative Faith blog was reasons why someone who's a Christian writer might want to consider game lit. And what would be some of those reasons could you summarize some of those reasons for people listening to the podcast?
Well, the one of the reasons why I got into it was that I used to be a very avid gamer. I played tabletop games, board games, video games, computer RPGs, just all kinds of craziness.
Right.
And then when I had to start taking on adult responsibilities and start battling a recurring wrist injury, I couldn't play anymore. And so being able to write lit RPG gives me a chance to play the games again, sort of. And so that was a huge reason for me.
Do you plan to continue writing more after Animal Eye? You know, we need to talk more about Animal Eye itself. We haven't really said all of what the game's about or anything like that. But before I get to that, which I should have done sooner, but do you plan to write more game-lit after Animal Eye?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got a sequel in brain that I want to tackle. And I've also got at least one other idea that I'm planning to be Gamelet's Tale, and a couple of others that would certainly fit if I write the game for it. So the one I'm thinking about would be a science fiction-based Gamelet instead of fantasy.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about Animal Eye, the plot or the story, the characters. I'd appreciate that.
All right. Animal Eye is a game scenario in which the players get to take on an animal persona instead of a typical human, elf, dwarf, kobold, or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And they become the companion critters for adventurers and accompany their humans around the landscape solving quests.
Okay. And about Animal Eye itself, what are the you mentioned there's a crow and a dog. I think you said that earlier in this podcast. But what's fun about, cool about playing a dog or playing a bird or anything like that?
Well, Otho's player, Kinmei, gets to learn how to fly. And her first few attempts at that were kind of humorously bad.
Right.
But once she gets it sorted out, then, you know, she turns it into a bit of a game for herself, where she's sort of generating her own, you know, personal roller coasters and dodging around tree trunks.
Right.
And having a grand time with that. And she also learns how to talk and becomes pretty fluent by the end. So she develops a mode of communication with her human involving various sound effects that she learns and phrases that she's picked up.
Right. In the book, she has quite a lot of scouting. She flies ahead and sees what's there, finds monsters or that there are monsters, and comes back and lets people know what's going on. So, though she does also do a little bit of fighting, actually, though that's not her thing so much. And the dog, what are the things that you know, that's interesting about being a dog?
Jake plays a Nathanian mountain shepherd, which was based on Ovcharka, which is the Russian bear dog.
Right.
Huge dog. And he gets really skilled at tracking by scent, and he also can run about as fast as his human's horse.
Right. I thought that would be a cool thing. If this were made into a real video game, to be able to adopt the perspective of an animal would be kind of fun. It would be fun to be able to fly, for example, and, you know, and you fly up to somebody, at least in my mind, and the human being is huge. And that the dog, as a dog, you wouldn't see the world in color the same way, because dogs can't see red. But you'd still see colors, just not the same ones, or not the you'd see us do yellow and blue and a shade, you know, shades in between. You did the story was that there's these scent words rising up from different things. And, you know, that's an idea I contributed to. But that I think that that's kind of a cool idea, because since we can't smell like that as human beings, that you could see where the smells are coming from. And then a player in the game could actually track somebody, the player could, and see the smells rising. I think that would be a kind of neat or mind opening, or it'd be wow, kind of cool to be in the world like an animal. But of course, the novel doesn't show us those pictures. It just talks about them. We have to paint the picture in our mind. But I think that the game idea, you know, I want to give you credit for it, it's innovative to tell a story from the point of view of an animal and to make it a game. You know, almost there are times in the story when the human non-player characters, NPCs, are interacting with each other, and the animals are kind of there in the background in the story, sort of, even though we know that there are human players playing them. It just gives this kind of strange, like, trippy feeling, like, what if my pet really is an intelligent person kind of thing, you know, which a lot of people fantasize about. So it's just kind of a neat, a dynamic that I didn't really expect to happen, or I didn't really know that it would be there until I found it as I read through. But I think that there's some really interesting about that. I think a lot of people who like animals, like pets, would like to play this sort of game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when the parrots that I had a variety of different parrots over several years. There were a couple of them that I was pretty sure they knew very well what I was saying and what I was doing. And one of them actually came up with some predictable ways to respond so that I knew so he was communicating what he needed back to me. And that one was just a white-capped pionis, a little bitty guy. Stands about a hand and a half high.
Right.
But, you know, he had different sound effects that he made when he was in trouble and needed help. He would actually ask me, the first time he saw me doing something unfamiliar, he would ask me, what are you doing? And he would keep asking until I told him.
Oh, really?
And
really?
Then once I told That's him, cool. He never asked for that event again.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Wow, what are you doing? That's pretty cool. Yeah, so, right. And that's kind of the part of the appeal of the game, or the imaginary game. It would be cool if this game actually existed, if we could rake out the money to create a video game in which you could play as an animal player and adventure. So your story world, talk about that, the setting in which this game takes place.
Well, it starts off looking for all the universe like it's a Renaissance or medieval era game.
Right.
One of the human characters uses a rapier and a black powder pistol.
Right. Sword and musket.
Yeah.
Like Renaissance type.
Very small
thing.
One.
Yeah. Right.
The other player is a highly skilled archer.
Right.
And so as they're traveling along, they run into these laughing maniacs that are incredibly fast and extremely strong and really hard to kill.
Right.
And they leave behind loot that looks like batteries.
Right.
Circuit boards.
Right. So let's not say too much about this actually on the podcast, but the setting is not what you expect, basically.
Right.
It's not, and it doesn't take too long actually in the book to figure that out, but how it's all rolled up in the end, you know, that's something you have to check out the book to find out. But I think this kind of story setting, or this thing where you have animal players in a game, it doesn't have to necessarily be in this story world, the Renaissance era, you know, that isn't really that, just seems that way. Mm-hmm. It could be in all kinds of things. It could be in a fantasy game. It could be a science fiction game. So I think a great thing in the future to do would be do like an animal eye, you know, thing where there's some kind of portal or way to travel to other universes. And even, you know, if there were people who hear this podcast who are interested in contributing as writers to a novel like this, you know, you and I have already talked about it, we'd be interested in, assuming that they do a good job and everything, we'd be interested in, sure, this is an open universe that we could create a number of different stories in this universe if people are interested. And so that would be, perhaps you're going to write these yourself. But anyway, I hope that we can, you know, that we won't be as slow, because I think you're more prolific writer than I am, which isn't saying a lot. I'm not prolific at all. But you know, I think that you can get a number of these written, and it's going to be cool to build a whole story universe, I think.
Definitely, yeah. Whether it's to continue to create different worlds for critters to go interact in, or even just creating little mini side quests. But yeah, I have a variety of different ideas and directions that it could go.
Well, that's pretty awesome. So what other projects are you working on in writing other than this?
I'm also working on a novella for a Rising Tide Publications anthology called Doc Saga. My story in that's going to be When the Chameleon Sings.
Really?
Yeah. And so that'll be coming soon. Doc Saga is a not entirely immortal, but awfully close, very long-lived character who goes around helping people heal from different kinds of injuries. That's what's next. I also have about 3/4 of the first draft of Suitable Arrangement, which is the sequel to Line of Succession.
Okay.
And then I'll need to read that in and revise the crud out of that, because that's got all kinds of issues that needs to be fixed. Next project after that would probably be For the Glory, which would be the sequel to Animal Eye.
Okay.
Or cool. I'm talking to some different game designers for tabletop RPGs about the prospect of taking all of our game notes that we came up with for the world building and creating a tabletop RPG out of it.
That would be a kick. Or at least it'd be fun for some. Not everybody who plays those kind of games would necessarily want to play, but some people I think would really enjoy it. I mean, it's different, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the designers I'm talking to said it would be a good entry-level game for a family environment.
Yeah, might be, yeah. And I think your story, too, is an entry-level, I guess we could say, story into lit RPG. So, I mean, if somebody's listening to this podcast and interested in the idea, I put on the Speculative Faith blog, does provide kind of a gateway or a connection between the world of Christian writing, what Cindy has done, and then this genre. But we have to give some, I guess, I feel that you need to give some caveats that there's some kind of like raunchy stuff in some elements of game lit or lit RPG.
Yes.
Some like, what was it you said, harem and reverse harem? What is reverse harem anyway?
It's one woman collecting a whole bunch of guys.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know. I guess that makes sense, reverse harem. But okay, and yeah, so it's, I just happened to run into the harem subgenre as I was searching online. That's one thing just popped up. And so apparently that's, you know, one of the things that people do with this kind of fantasy is they run in directions. And you mentioned a lot of stories have a lot of profanity as well.
Right.
But that's, you know, just like when you're dealing with anything, if you're a Christian parent, you have a kid interested in something, you have to pay attention to what it is they're doing and recommend discernment. But I hope that what happens is that people who read let our RPG might find something that's a clean alternative and that they'll like what you've done. So, well, Cindy, do you have any, you know, like long-term plans as a writer, or what would you like to accomplish in the future, or you just like one day at a time?
I mean, I have a list of projects I'd like to tackle. A lot of that's dependent on how much spare time I get around the day job. But really, I tackle one project at a time, take advantage of situations as they occur. Like this Doc Saga anthology was something that very suddenly came up. And the two Rise and Rescue lit RPG anthologies and Warriors Tribute lit RPG anthology that came up were also a very sudden phenomena, where I heard about it in the deadlines a month from now. And so...
So, I mean, those haven't been published yet?
Well, they are.
Okay.
They're out. Once, between the time that I heard that they were going to happen and the time that the deadline was about a month away. So it was kind of like, drop what I'm doing, write the story, get it edited, submit it, you know.
Are you doing animal characters for those as well or not?
Not those, no. The only other animal character I did was Seeking What's Lost in Mythic Orbits 2.
Right, which I know that story because we were working on. Mm-hmm. That features a secondary character, I guess we could say, that winds up being in Animal Eye, which is cool. Very nice. Anyway, a couple other random questions, Cindy. Now, how many books do you have published now already?
Animal Eye was number 8.
Number 8, okay. And you have numerous short stories too, right, I think?
Right, yeah.
Various places. Well, and with me, you have a number, so, and you've been very supportive of my work over the years. And I have a story from you in Medieval Mars, another in Victorian Venus, and Mythic Orbits too. And then, of course, Avatar's a Web Surfer. You did some of the best stories in that anthology, if you ask me. But I also wrote a story for that anthology. And then, you know, Andrew Graham and Heather Titus wrote for that. So anyway, and that whole thing is a kind of cyberpunk sort of story setting. And as you mentioned, it could have lent itself very well to game, but the mind behind that anthology, Andrea Graham, just really wasn't interested in going that direction. But I hope that the Animal Eye stuff really goes well. And I also hope that I hope someday we can make a video game out of it. I think that'd be awesome to actually be able to play as an animal. That would be, I would like totally play that. So even if it's kind of, quote, for kids, unquote, but I don't think just being kid friendly doesn't necessarily make something, you know, terrible or uninteresting. Mm-hmm. Do you have any further things you want to add or say or projects you want to plug?
I also had a recent release that was Arushalon 2 Into the Open. It was the sequel to Arushalon 1, Like Herding the Wind, and that recently came out. Arushalon 2 finishes the plotline that started in 1, where they finally figure out who the person is who's been sabotaging the station with bad equipment and equipping their enemies with much better equipment. So Ed and Amaya have to protect a group of dignitaries from very well-equipped criminals with only their own poorly trained staff and faulty equipment.
Well, so where can people find you on social media, Cindy, if somebody wants to connect with you?
The easiest is my webpage at ckoepp.com. And then my Amazon author page is a bit.ly address, bit.ly/ckepamazon.
Okay. Well, and you can be found on my site, Bear Publications, www.bearpublications.com. There is a number of stories that Cindy has contributed to, including now Animal Eye. We just got that page up, as a matter of fact. Thanks so much for talking to me about Animal Eye. I hope I didn't do too much of the talking, but it's been fun to contribute to this. I'm glad that we could help get this thing out. Anyway, Cindy, thanks so much for talking to me, and you have a good evening. I hope you enjoy your weekend.
Great fun for all. Hope you have fun with yours.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.